It's not hard to find your way out of the swamp. Out on the horizon beyond it, you can always see three mountains, one close and two farther away but next to each other. The river on Ben's map goes twixt the closer one and the two farther away ones, so all we gotta do is keep heading toward that space in the middle, and we should find the river again and follow it. Follow it to where the arrows keep going. Keep going to another settlement. There it is, right there at the bottom of the page where the map ends. A whole other place. As if I don't have enough new stuff to think about. I look up at the girl, still staring at me, maybe not even blinking. I shine the flashlight in her face. She winces and turns away. "Where'd you come from?" I ask. "Is it here?" I point the flashlight down at the map and put my finger on the other town. The girl don't move, so I wave her over. She still don't move, so I sigh and pick up the book and take it over to her and shine the flashlight on the page. I point to myself, am from here. I point to our farm north of Prentistown on the map. "This," I say, waving my arms around to show the swamp, "is here." I point at the swamp. "We need to go here." I point at the other town. Ben's written the other town's name underneath, but, well, whatever. "Is this where you're from?" I point to her, point to the other town, point to her again. "Are you from here?" She looks at the map, but other than that, nothing. I sigh in frustration and step away from her. It's uncomfortable being so close. "Well, I sure hope so," I say, studying the map. "'Cause that's where we're going." "Todd!" Manchie barks. I look up. The girl started to wander around in circles in the clearing, looking at stuff like it means something to her. "What are you doing?" I ask. She looks at me, at the flashlight in my hand, and she points through some trees. "What?" I say. "We don't have time." She points through the trees again and starts walking there. "Hey!" I say, "Hey!" I guess I have to follow. "We gotta stick to the map!" I duck under the branches to follow her, the rucksack getting caught left and right. "Hey, wait up!" I stumble on, Manchie behind me, the flashlight not much good against every ruddy little branch and root and puddle in a great big swamp. I keep having to drop my head and tear the rucksack free of stuff so I can barely look ahead enough to follow her. I see her standing by a fallen, burnt-looking tree, waiting for me, watching me come. "What are you doing?" I say, finally catching up with her. "Where are you?" And then I see. The tree is burned. Freshly burned and freshly knocked over, too. The unburned splinters clean and white like new wood. And there are a bunch of trees just like it. A whole line of them, in fact. On either side of a great ditch gouged out of the swamp, now filled with water, but piled up dirt and burned plants all around it show it's gotta be a new thing. Like someone came through here and dug it up in one fiery swoop. What happened? I swing the flashlight along it. What did this? She just looks off to the left, where the ditch disappears into darkness. I shine the flashlight down that way, but it's not strong enough to see what's down there. Though it feels like something's there. The girl takes off into the darkness toward whatever it might be. "Where are you going?" I ask, not expecting an answer and not getting any. Manchie gets twixt me and the girl like he's following her now instead of me, and off they go in the dark. I keep my distance, but I follow too. The silence still flows from her, still bothers me, like it's ready to swallow up the whole world and me with it. I keep the flashlight shining over every possible square inch of water. Crocs don't usually come this far into the swamp, but that's only usually. Plus there's red snakes that are poisonous and water weasels that bite, and it just don't feel like luck is bothering with any of us today, so if something can go wrong, it's probably gonna. We're getting closer, and I shine the flashlight down to where we're heading, and something starts glinting back. Something that ain't tree or bush or animal or water. Something metal. Something big and metal.
What's that?
I say. We get closer, and at first I think it's just a big fission bike, and I wonder what kind of idiot would try to ride a fission bike in a swamp, because you can barely get him to work over flattened dirt roads, much less water and roots. But it ain't a fission bike. Hold up! The girl stops. What do you know? The girl stops. So you can understand me then? But nothing. As ever, nothing. Well, hold up for a sec, I say, because a thought's coming. We're still a bit away from it, but I keep flicking the flashlight over the metal, and back over the straight line that the ditch makes, and over the metal again, and over all the burned stuff on either side of the ditch, and a thought keeps coming. The girl stops waiting and heads off toward the metal, and I follow. We have to go around a big burned log, still lazily smoking in one or two spots, to get to the thing, and when we do, it's much bigger than the biggest fission bike, and even then, it looks like it's only part of an even bigger something than that. It's crumpled and burned in most places, and even though I don't know what it looked like before it crumpled and burned, it's obviously mostly wreckage. And it's obviously wreckage of a ship. An airship. Maybe even a spaceship. Is this yours? I ask, shining the flashlight at the girl. She don't say nothing, as usual, but she don't say it in a way that could be agreement. Did you crash here? I shine the flashlight up and down her body, up and down her clothes, which are a bit different than what I'm used to, sure, but not so different that they couldn't have belonged to me once upon a time. Where'd you come from? I say. But of course she don't say nothing and just looks off to a place farther into the darkness, crosses her arms, and starts heading off there. I don't follow this time. I keep looking at the ship. That's what it's gotta be. I mean, look at it. A lot of it's smashed beyond recognition, but you can still see something that might be a hull, might be an engine, even something that might have been a window. The first homes in Prentice Town, see, were made from the ships the original settlers landed in. Sure, wood and log homes got built after, but Ben says the first thing you do when you land is build immediate shelter, and immediate shelter comes from the first supplies to hand. The church and the gas station back in town are still partly made out of metal hulls and holds and rooms and such. And though this heap of wreckage is pretty pounded, if you look at it right, it might be an old Prentice Town house that fell right out of the sky. Right out of the sky on fire. Todd! Manchie barks from somewhere out of sight. Todd! I go running round to where the girl disappeared, round the wreckage to a part that seems less smashed up. As I run past, I can even see a door that's been opened out the side of one wall of metal a little way up, and there's even a light on inside. Todd! Manchie barks, and I shine the flashlight over to where he's barking, standing next to the girl. She's just standing there, looking down at something, and so I shine the flashlight and see that she's standing by two long piles of clothes, which are actually two bodies, ain't they? I walk over, shining the flashlight down. There's a man, his clothes and body pretty much completely burned away from the chest down. His face has burns, too, but not enough to disguise that he was a man. He has a wound on his forehead that would have killed him, even if the burns hadn't. But it don't matter, does it, 'cause he's dead either way. Dead and lying here in a swamp. I swing the flashlight over, and he's lying next to a woman, ain't he? I hold my breath. It's the first woman I ever seen in the flesh, and it's the same as the girl. I never seen a woman in real life before, but if there was a real-life woman, that's what she'd be. And dead, too, of course, but nothing as obvious as burns and a gash, not even blood on her clothes, so maybe she's busted up on the inside. But a woman. An actual woman. I shine the flashlight at the girl. She don't flinch. That's your ma and pa, ain't it? I ask, my voice low. The girl don't say nothing. But it's gotta be true. I shine the flashlight over the wreckage and think of the burnt ditch behind it, and it can only mean one thing. She crashed here with her ma and pa. They died. She lived. And if she came from somewhere else on New World, or if she came from somewhere else altogether, don't matter. They died. She lived. And she was here all alone. And got found by Aaron. When luck ain't with you, it's against you. On the ground I see drag marks where the girl must have pulled the bodies out of the crash and brought them here. But the swamp ain't for burying anything but spackle, 'cause after 2 inches of dirt, you pretty much just get water, and so here they sit. I hate to say it, but they do smell, though in the overall smell of the swamp it ain't as bad as you'd think, so who knows how long she's been here. The girl looks at me again, not crying, not smiling, just blank as ever. Then she walks past me, walks back along the drag marks, walks to the door I saw open in the side of the wreckage, climbs up, and disappears inside. 10. Food and Fire. Hey, I say, following her over the wreckage. We can't be hanging around. I get up to the door at the same time she pops out, making me jump back. She waits for me to step out of the way, then climbs down from the door and walks past me, carrying a bag in one hand and a couple of small packets in the other. I look back at the door and stand on tiptoes, trying to peek in. It all looks like a wreck inside. As you'd expect, things tumbled everywhere. Lots of busted everything. How do you live through that? I ask, turning around. But she's got herself busy. She's put down the bag and the packs and has taken out what looks like a small, flat green box. She sets it down on a dryish area of ground and piles some sticks on top of it. I look at her in disbelief. There ain't time to make it. She presses a button on the side of the box and whoosh! We've got ourselves a whole, full-sized instant campfire. I just stand there like a fool, my mouth wide open. I want a campfire box. She looks at me and rubs her arms a little bit, and it's only then that I really realize I'm soaking wet and cold and achy all over, and that a fire is just about the closest thing to a blessing I can think of. I look back into the blackness of the swamp, as if I'd be able to see anyone coming. Nothing, of course, but no sounds, neither. No one close. Not yet. I look back at the fire. Only for a second, I say. I walk over to the fire and start warming up my hands, keeping my rucksack on. She rips open one of the packs and throws it to me, and I stare at it again till she dips her fingers into her own pack, taking out what must be a piece of dried fruit or something, and eating it. She's given me food. And fire. Her face still has no kind of expression at all, just blank as a stone as she stands by the fire and eats. I start eating, too. The fruit, or whatever, are like little shriveled dots, but sweet and chewy, and I finish the whole pack in half a minute before I notice Manchie begging.
Todd?
He says, licking his lips. Oh, I say. Sorry. The girl looks at me, looks at Manchie, then takes out a small handful from her own pack and holds it out to Manchie. When he approaches, she jerks back a little, like she can't help it, and drops the fruit on the ground instead. Manchie don't mind. He gobbles it right up. I nod at her. She don't nod back. It's full-fledged night now, dark as anything outside our little circle of light. You can only even see stars through the hole in the treetops made by the crashing ship. I try to think back over the last week if I heard any distant booms from the swamp, but anything this far out could have been drowned in the noise of Prentistown, I suppose, and been missed by everyone. I think of a certain preacher. Nearly everyone. We can't stay, I say. I'm sorry about your folks and all, but there's others that'll be after us, even if Aaron's dead. At Aaron's name, she flinches, just a little. He must have said his name to her, or something, maybe. I'm sorry, I say, though I don't know what for. I shift my rucksack on my back. It feels heavier than ever. Thanks for the grub, but we gotta go. I look at her. If you're coming. The girl looks at me for a second, and then uses the tip of her boot to knock the burning sticks off the little green box. She reaches down, presses the button again, and picks up the box without even burning herself. Man, I really want one of those things. She puts it in the bag she brought out of the wreckage with her, and then brings the strap of the bag over her head like her own rucksack. Like she was planning on coming with me even before now. Well, I say, when all she does is stare at me, I guess we're ready then. Neither of us moves. I look back to her ma and pa. She does too, but only for a second. I want to say something to her, something more, but what do you say? I open my mouth anyway, but she starts rummaging in her bag. I think it's going to be something to, I don't know, remember her folks with or make some kind of gesture or something, but she finds what she's looking for, and it's only a flashlight. She flicks it on, so she does know how they work, and starts walking. First toward me, then past me, as if we're already on our way. And that's it. Like her ma and pa ain't just lying there dead. I watch her go for a second before saying, "Hey!" She turns back to me. "Not that way." I point to our left. "That way." I head off the right way, Manchi following, and I look back and the girl's coming after us. I take one last quick look behind her, and as bad as I want to stay and look through that wreckage for more neat stuff, and boy do I, we gotta go. Even though it's night, even though nobody's slept, we gotta go. And so we do, catching sight of the horizon through the trees when we can, and heading toward the space twixt the close mountain and the two farther away mountains. Both moons are more than halfway full, and the sky is clear, so there's at least a little bit of light to walk by, even under the swamp canopy, even in the dark. "Keep your ears open," I say to Manchi.
"For what?"
Manchi barks. "For things that could get us, idiot." You can't really run in a dark swamp at night, so we walk as fast as we can, me shining my flashlight in front of us, tripping our way around tree roots and trying not to tromp through too much mud. Manchi goes ahead and comes back, sniffing around and sometimes barking, but nothing serious. The girl keeps up, never falling behind, but never getting too close neither, which is good, 'cause even though my noise is about the quietest it's been all day, the silence of her still presses on it whenever she comes too near. It's weird that she didn't do nothing more about her ma and pa when we left, ain't it? Didn't cry or have one last visit or nothing? Am I wrong? I'd give anything to see Ben and even Killian again, even if they were... well, even if they are.
"Ben,"
Manchi says down by my knees.
"I know."
I scratch him twixt the ears. We keep on. I'd want to bury them, if that's what it came to. I'd want to do something. I don't know what. I stop and look back at the girl, but her face is just the same as ever. And is it 'cause she crashed and her parents died? Is it 'cause Aaron found her? Is it 'cause she's from somewhere else? Don't she feel nothing? Is she just nothing at all on the inside? She's looking at me, waiting for me to go on. And so, after a second, I do. Hours. There's hours of this silent nighttime fast creeping. Hours of it. Who knows how far we're going or if we're heading the right way or what, but hours. Once in a while, I hear the noise of a nighttime creature, swamp owls cooing their way to dinner, swooping down on probably short-tailed mice whose noise is so quiet it's barely like language at all. But mostly, all I hear is the now and then fast-fading noise of a nighttime creature running away from all the ruckus we must be making by tromping through a swamp at night. But the weird thing is, there's still no sound of nothing behind us, nothing chasing us. No noise, no branches breaking, nothing. Maybe Ben and Killian threw them off the trail. Maybe the reason I'm running ain't so important after all. Maybe... The girl stops to pull her shoe out of some mud. The girl. No, they're coming. The only maybe is that maybe they're waiting till daybreak so they can come faster. And so on and on we go, getting more and more tired. Stopping only once so that everyone can have a private pee off in the bushes. I get some of Ben's food out of my own rucksack and feed small bits to everyone since it's my turn. And then more walking and more walking. And then there comes an hour just before dawn where there can't be no more. "We gotta stop," I say, dropping the rucksack at the base of a tree. "We gotta rest." The girl sets her own bag down by another tree without needing any more convincing, and we both just sort of collapse down, leaning on our bags like pillows. "5 minutes," I say. Manchi curls up by my legs and closes his eyes almost immediately. "Only 5 minutes," I call over to the girl, who's pulled a little blanket out of her bag to cover herself with. "Don't get too comfortable." We gotta keep going, no question of that. I'll only close my eyes for a minute or two, just to get a little rest, and then we'll keep on going faster than before. Just a little rest, that's all. I open my eyes and the sun is up. Only a little, but ruddy well up. Crap. We've lost at least an hour, maybe two. And then I realize it's a sound that's woken me. It's noise. I panic, thinking of men finding us, and I scramble to my feet, only to see that it ain't a man. It's a casser, towering over me and Manchi and the girl.
"Food?"
says its noise. I knew they hadn't left the swamp. I hear a little gasp from over where the girl's sleeping. Not sleeping no more. The casser turns to look at her, and then Manchi's up and barking, Get! And the casser's neck swings back our way. Imagine the biggest bird you ever saw. Imagine it got so big that it couldn't even fly no more. We're talking 10 or 12 feet tall. A super long, bendy neck stretching up way over your head. It's still got feathers, but they look more like fur, and the wings ain't good for much except stunning things they're about to eat. But it's the feet you gotta watch out for. Long legs up to your chest, with claws at the end that can kill you with one kick if you're not careful. "Don't worry," I call over to the girl. "They're friendly." Because they are. Or they're supposed to be. They're supposed to eat rodents and only kick if you attack them. But if you don't attack them, Ben says they're friendly and dopey and'll let you feed them. And they're also good to eat, a combo which made the new settlers of Prentistown so eager to hunt them for food that by the time I was born, there wasn't a casser to be seen within miles. Yet another thing I only ever saw in a vid or noise. The world keeps getting bigger.
Get!
Manchi barks, running in a circle around the casser.
"Don't bite it!"
I shout at him. The casser's neck is swinging around like a vine, following Manchi around like a cat after a bug.
"Food?"
its noise keeps asking. "Not food," I say, and the big neck swings my way.
"Food?"
"Not food," I say again. "Just a dog."
"Dog?"
it thinks, and starts following Manchi around again, trying to nip him with its beak. The beak ain't a scary thing at all, like being nipped by a goose, but Manchi's having none of it, leaping out of the way and barking, barking, barking. I laugh at him. It's funny. And then I hear a little laugh that ain't my own. I look over, and the girl is standing by her tree, watching the giant bird chase around my stupid dog. And she's laughing. She's smiling. She sees me looking, and she stops.
"Food?"
I hear, and I turn to see the casser starting to poke its beak into my rucksack. "Hey!" I shout, and start shooing it away.
"Food?"
"Here!" I fish out a small block of cheese wrapped in a cloth that Ben packed. The casser sniffs it, bites it, and gobbles it down, its neck rippling in long waves as it swallows. It snaps its beak a few times like a man might smack his lips after he ate something. But then its neck starts rippling the other way, and with a loud hack, up comes the block of cheese flying right back at me, covered in spit, but not hardly even crushed, smacking me on the cheek and leaving a trail of slime across my face.
"Food?"
says the casser, and starts slowly walking off into the swamp, as if we're no longer even as interesting as a leaf.
Get!
Manchi barks after it, but not following. I wipe the slime from my face with my sleeve, and I can see the girl smiling at me while I do it. "Think that's funny, do ya?" I say, and she keeps pretending like she's not smiling. But she is. She turns away and picks up her bag. "Yeah," I say, taking charge of things again. "We slept way too long. We gotta go." We get going on yet more walking without any more words or smiling. Pretty quick, the ground starts to get less even and a bit drier. The trees start to thin out some, letting the sun directly on us now and then. After a little bit, we get to a small clearing, almost like a little field that rises up to a short bluff standing just over the treetops. We climb it and stop at the top. The girl holds out another pack of that fruity stuff. Breakfast. We eat, still standing. Looking out over the trees, the way in front of us is clear. The large mountain is on the horizon, and you can see the two smaller mountains in the distance behind a little bit of haze. "That's where we're going," I say, pointing. "Or where I think we're supposed to go anyway." She sets down her fruit pack and goes into her bag again. She pulls out the sweetest little pair of binocs you've ever seen. My old ones back home that broke years ago were like a bread box in comparison. She holds them up to her eyes and looks for a bit, then hands them to me. I take them and I look out to where we're going. Everything's so clear. The ground stretching out before us in a green forest, curving downhill into proper valleys and dales as it starts to become real land again, and not just the mucky bowl of a swamp. And you can even see where the marsh starts turning back into a real river, cutting deeper and deeper canyons as it gets closer to the mountains. If you listen, you can even hear it rushing. I look and I look and I don't see no settlement, but who knows what's around the bends and curves? Who knows what's up ahead? I look behind us, back the way we came, but it's still early enough for the mist to be covering most of the swamp, hiding everything, giving nothing away. "Those are sweet," I say, handing her the binocs. She puts them back in her bag, and we stand there for a minute, eating. We stand arm's length apart, because her silence still bothers me. I chew down on a piece of dried fruit, and I wonder what it must be like to have no noise, to come from a place with no noise. What does it mean? What kind of place is it? Is it wonderful? Is it terrible? Say you were standing on a hilltop with someone who had no noise. Would it be like you were alone there? How would you share it? Would you want to? I mean, here we are, the girl and I, heading out of danger and into the unknown, and there's no noise overlapping us. Nothing to tell us what the other's thinking. Is that how it's supposed to be? I finish the fruit and crumple up the packet. She holds out her hand and shoves the rubbish back into her bag. No words, no exchange. Just my noise and a great big nothing from her. Was this what it was like for my Ma and Pa when they first landed? Was New World a silent place all over before... I look up at the girl suddenly. Before. Oh no. I'm such a fool. I'm such a stupid goddamn fool. She has no noise. And she came from a ship. Which means she came from a place with no noise, obviously, idiot. Which means she's landed here and hasn't caught the noise germ yet. Which means that when she does, it's gonna do what it did to all the other women. It's gonna kill her. It's gonna kill her! And I'm looking at her, and the sun is shining down on us, and her eyes are getting wider and wider as I'm thinking it. And it's then I realize something else stupid, something else obvious. Just 'cause I can't hear any noise from her don't mean she can't hear every word of mine. 11. The Book of No Answers. No, I say quickly. Don't listen. I'm wrong. I'm wrong. It's a mistake. I'm wrong. But she's backing away from me, dropping her own empty packet of fruit things, her eyes getting wider. No, don't. I step toward her, but she takes an even quicker step away, her bag dropping to the ground. It's... I say, but what do you say? I'm wrong. I'm wrong. I was thinking of somebody else. Which is the stupidest thing to say of all, 'cause she can hear my noise, can't she? She can see me struggling to think of something to say, and even if it's coming out a big mess, she can see herself all over it, and besides, I surely know by now there's no taking back something that's been sent out into the world. Damn it. God damn it all to hell. Damn it! Manchi barks.
Why didn't you say you could hear me?
I shout, ignoring that she ain't said a word since I met her. She steps back farther, putting a hand up to her face to cover her mouth, her eyes sending asking marks at me. I try to think of something, anything to make it all right, but I ain't got nothing. Just noise with death and despair all over it. She turns and runs, back down the hill and away from me as fast as she can. Crap.
Wait!
I yell, already running after her. She's going back the way we came, down across the little field and disappearing into the trees, but I'm right behind her, Manchi after me.
Stop!
I shout after her. Wait!
But why should she?
What kind of reason could she possibly have to wait around? You know, she's really amazingly fast when she wants to be.
Manchi!
I call, and he understands me and shoots off after her. Not that I could really lose her any more than she could lose me. As loud as my noise is chasing her, her silence is just as loud up ahead, even now, even knowing she's going to die, still as silent as a grave.
Hold on!
I shout, tripping over a root and landing hard on my elbows, which jolts every ache I've got in my body and face. But I have to get up. I have to get up and go after her.
Damn it! Todd!
I hear Manchi bark up ahead, out of sight. I stumble on a bit and get my way around a big mass of shrubs, and there she is, sitting on a big, flat rock jutting out of the ground, her knees up to her chest, rocking back and forth, eyes wide but blank as ever.
Todd!
Manchi barks again when he sees me. Then he hops up on the rock next to her and starts sniffing her.
Leave her alone, Manchi,
I say, but he doesn't. He sniffs close at her face, licks her once or twice, then sits down next to her, leaning into her side as she rocks.
Look,
I say to her, catching my breath and knowing I don't know what to say next.
Look,
I say again, but nothing else is coming. I just stand there panting, not saying nothing. And she sits there rocking till there don't seem nothing else to do but sit down on the rock myself, keeping a distance away out of respect and safety, I guess. And so that's what I do. She rocks, and I sit, and I wonder what to do. We pass a good few minutes this way. A good few minutes when we should be moving, the swamp getting on with its day around us. Till I finally have another thought.
I might not be right,
I say, as soon as I think it.
I could be wrong, you see.
I turn to her and I start talking fast.
I got lied to about everything, and you can search my noise if you want to be sure that's true.
I stand talking faster.
There wasn't supposed to be another settlement. Prentistown was supposed to be it for the whole stupid planet, but there's the other place on the map, so maybe...
And I'm thinking, and I'm thinking, and I'm thinking.
Maybe the germ was only Prentistown. And if you ain't been in the town, then maybe you're safe. Maybe you're fine, 'cause I sure can't hear nothing from you, anything like noise, and you don't seem sick, so maybe you're okay.
She's looking at me and still rocking, and I don't know what she's thinking. Maybe probably ain't all that comforting a word when it's maybe you're not dying. I keep on thinking, letting her see my noise as free and clear as I can.
Maybe we all caught the germ and, yeah,
I get another thought, a good one.
Maybe we cut ourselves off so that the other settlement wouldn't catch it. That must be it. And so if you stayed in the swamp, then you're safe.
She stops rocking quite so much, still looking at me. Maybe believe in me. But then, like some doofus who don't know when to stop, I let that thought go on, don't I? 'Cause if it's true that Prentistown was cut off, then maybe that other settlement ain't gonna be too happy to see me strolling in, are they? Maybe it was the other settlement that did the cutting off in the first place, 'cause maybe Prentistown really was contagious. And if you can catch noise from other people, then the girl can catch it from me, can't she? Oh, man, I say, leaning down and putting my hands on my knees, my whole body feeling like it's falling, even though I'm still standing up. Oh, man. The girl hugs herself again on the rock, and we're back to even worse than where we started.
This ain't fair. I'm telling you, this ain't fair at all.
You'll know what to do when you get to the swamp, Todd. You'll know what to do.
Yeah, thanks very much for that, Ben. Thanks for all your help and concern, 'cause here I am, and I ain't got the first clue what to do. It ain't fair. I get kicked out of my home. I get beaten up. The people who say they care for me have been lying all these years. I gotta follow a stupid map to a settlement I never knew about. I gotta somehow read a stupid book.
The book. I slip off the rucksack and take out the book. He said all the answers were in here. So maybe they really are. Except...
I sigh and open it up. It's all written. All words. All in my ma's handwriting. Pages and pages and pages of it. And I... Well, anyway. I go back to the map. To Ben's writing on the other side. The first chance I've had to look at it under something besides a flashlight. Which ain't really for reading. Ben's words are lined up at the top. Go to are the first ones. Those are definitely the first words. And then there are a couple of longer words that I don't have time to sound out yet. And then a couple of big paragraphs that I really don't have time for right now. But at the bottom of the page, Ben's underlined a group of words together. I look at the girl still rocking, and I turn my back to her. I put my finger under the first underlined word. Let's see. Yow. You. It's gotta be you. You. Okay. Me what? Moo? Moose? Moosed? You moosed? You moosed? The hell does that mean? Warren? Taheem, you moosed Warren Taheem. No, wait, them, it's them. Of course it's them, idiot. But you moosed Warren them? Huh? Remember when I said Ben tried to teach me to read? Remember when I said I wasn't too good at it? Well, whatever. You moosed Warren them. Idiot. I look at the book again, flip through the pages. Dozens of them. Dozens upon dozens. All with more words in every corner. All saying nothing to me at all. No answers of any kind. Stupid effing book. I shove the map back inside, slam the cover shut, and throw the book on the ground. You idiot. Stupid effin' book, I say out loud this time, kicking it into some ferns. I turn back to the girl. She's still just rocking back and forth, and I know, okay, I know, but it starts to piss me off. 'Cause if this is a dead end, I got nothing more to offer, and she ain't offering nothing either. My noise starts to crackle. I didn't ask for this, you know, I say. She don't even look. Hey, I'm talking to you! But nothing. 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 I don't know what to do! I yell and stand and start stomping around, shouting till my voice scratches. I don't know what to do! I don't know what to do! I turn back to the girl. I'm sorry! I'm sorry this happened to you, but I don't know what to do about it, and stop effing rocking!
Yelling, Todd?
Manchi barks. Ah! I shout, putting my hands over my face. I take them away and nothing's changed. That's the thing I'm learning about being thrown out on your own. Nobody does nothing for you. If you don't change it, it don't get changed. We gotta keep going, I say, picking up my rucksack all angry-like. You ain't caught it yet, so maybe just keep your distance from me and you'll be okay. I don't know, but that's all there is, so that's what we gotta do. Rock, rock, rock. We can't go back, so we gotta go forward, and that's that. Still rocking. I know you can hear me! She don't even flinch, and I'm suddenly tired all over again. Fine, I sigh. Fine, whatever. You stay here and rock. Who cares? Who ruddy cares about anything?
I look at the book on the ground. Stupid thing. But it's what I got, so I reach down, pick it up, put it in the plastic bag, back in my rucksack, and put my rucksack back on. Come on, Manchi.
Todd?
He barks, looking twixt me and the girl.
Can't leave, Todd!
She can come if she wants, I say.
But...
I don't even really know what the but might be. But if she wants to stay here and die all alone? But if she wants to go back and get caught by Mr. Prentice Jr.? But if she wants to risk catching the noise from me and dying that way? What a stupid world. Hey, I say, trying to make my voice a little gentler, but my noise is so raging there's really no point. You know where we're heading, right? To the river twixt the mountains. Just follow it till you come to a settlement, okay? Maybe she's hearing me. Maybe she ain't. I'll keep an eye out for you, I say. I understand if you don't want to get too close, but I'll keep an eye out for you. I stand there for another minute to see if it sinks in. Well, I finally say, nice knowing you. I start walking away. When I get to the big stack of shrubs, I turn back, giving her one more chance. But she ain't changed, just rocking and rocking. So that's that, then. Off I go, Manchi reluctantly on my heels, looking back as much as he can, barking my name all the time.
Todd? Todd? Leaving Todd? Todd? Can't leave Todd!
I finally smack him on the rump.
Oh, Todd!
I don't know, Manchi, so quit asking. We make our way back through the trees to where the ground dries out, to the clearing and up the little bluff where we ate our breakfast and looked at the beautiful day, and I had my brilliant deduction about her death. The little bluff where her bag still lies on the ground. Oh, God damn it! I look at it for a second, and it's one thing after another, ain't it? I mean, do I take it back to her? Do I just hope she finds it? Will I put her in danger if I do? Will I put her in danger if I don't? The sun's fully up now, and the sky is blue as fresh meat. I put my hands on my hips and take a long look around like men do when they're thinking. I look at the horizon, look back the way we came, the mist mostly burned off by now, and the whole swamp forest covered in sunlight. From the top of the bluff, you can see out over it, over where we drove our feet into oblivion by walking it all. If it were clear enough, and you had powerful enough binocs, you could probably see all the way back to town. Powerful binocs. I look down at her bag on the ground there. I'm reaching for it when I think I hear something. Like a whisper. My noise leaps, and I look up to see if the girl's following me out after all, which would make me more relieved than I want to say. But it ain't the girl. I hear it again. A whisper. More than one whisper. Like the wind is carrying whispering on it.
Todd?
Manchi says, sniffing the air. I squint into the sunlight to look back over the swamp. Is there something out there? I grab the girl's bag and look through it for the binocs. There's all kinds of neat crap in there, but I take the binocs out and look through them. Just swamp is all I see. The tops of swamp trees, little clearings of swampy bits of water, the river eventually starting to form itself again. I take the binocs away from my face and look them over. There are little buttons everywhere, and I push a few and realize I can make everything look even closer. I do that a couple of times, and I'm sure I can hear whispering now. I'm sure of it. I find the gash in the swamp, the ditch, find the wreckage of her ship, but there's nothing there except what we left. I look over the top of the binocs, wondering if I see movement. I look through them again, a little nearer to us where some trees are rustling. But that's only the wind, ain't it? I scan back and forth, pressing buttons to get closer and farther away, but I keep coming back to those rustling trees. I keep the binocs trained on a kind of open, gully-type thing twixt me and them. I keep the binocs there. I keep the binocs watching, my guts twisting as maybe I'm hearing whispering, maybe I ain't. I keep watching, till the rustling reaches the clearing, and I see the mayor himself come out of the trees on horseback, leading other men, also on horses. And they're heading right this way. 12. The bridge. The mayor. Not just his son, but actually the mayor, with his clean hat and his clean face and his clean clothes and his shiny boots and his upright pose. We don't never actually get to see him much in Prentistown, not no more, not if you're not in his close little circle. But when you do, he always looks like this, even through a pair of binocs, like he knows how to take care of himself and you don't. I push some more buttons till I'm as close as I can get. There's 5 of them. No, 6. The men whose noise you hear doing those freaky exercises in the mayor's house. I am the circle, and the circle is me. That kind of thing. There's Mr. Collins, Mr. McInerney, Mr. O'Hare, and Mr. Morgan all on horses, too. Itself a rare sight, because horses are hard to keep alive on New World, and the mayor guards his personal herd with a whole raft of men with guns. And there's Mr. Ruddy Prentice Jr. riding up next to his father, wearing a shiner from where Killian hit him. Good. But then I realize that means whatever happened at the farm is definitely over with. Whatever happened to Ben and Killian is done. I put the binocs down for a second and swallow it away. I put the binocs back up. The group stopped for a minute and are talking to each other, looking over a large piece of paper that's gotta be a way better map than mine and... Oh, man. Oh, man, you gotta be kidding. Aaron. Aaron comes walking out of the trees behind him. Stinking, stupid, ruddy, effing ruddy Aaron. Most of his head is wrapped in bandages, but he's pacing the ground a little way back from the mayor, waving his hands in the air, looking like he's probably preaching, even if no one looks like they're listening. How? How could he have lived? Doesn't he ever effing die? It's my fault. My stupid effing fault, because I'm a coward. I'm a weak and stupid coward, and because of that, Aaron's alive, and because of that, he's leading the mayor through the ruddy swamp after us, because I didn't kill him. He's coming to kill me. I feel sick. I bend over double and hold my stomach, moaning a bit. My blood is charging so hard, I can hear Manchi creep a little ways away from me. It's my fault, Manchi, I say. I did this.
Your fault,
he says, confused and just repeating what I said, but right on the money, ain't he? I make myself look through the binocs again, and I see the mayor call Aaron over. Since men started being able to hear animals' thoughts, Aaron thinks they're unclean and won't go near them, so it takes the mayor a couple of tries. But eventually, Aaron comes tromping over to look at the map. He listens while the mayor asks him something. And then he looks up. Looks up through the swamp, trees, and sky. Looks up to this hilltop. Looks right at me. He can't see me. No way. Can he? Not without binocs like the girls, and I don't see any on the men. Never saw anything like him in Prentistown. Gotta be. He can't see me. But like a great pitiless thing, he raises his arm and points. Points it directly at me, like I'm sitting across a table from him. I'm running before I can even think. Running back down the bluff and back to the girl as fast as I can, reaching behind me and pulling out my knife. Manchi barking up a storm on my heels. I get into the trees and down and around the big mess of shrubs, and she's still sitting on the rock, but at least she looks up as I run to her. Come on, I say, grabbing her arm. We gotta go. She pulls back from me, but I don't let go.
No,
I shout. We have to go, now. She starts hitting out with her fists, clonking me a couple of times on the face, but I ain't letting go.
Listen,
I say, and I open up my noise for her. She hits me once more, but then she's looking. Looking at my noise as it comes. Seeing the pictures of what's waiting for us in the swamp. Check that. What's not waiting for us. What's making every effort to come get us. Aaron, who won't die, bending all his thoughts to finding us and coming this time with men on horseback, who are a lot faster than we are. The girl's face squishes up like she's in the worst pain ever, and she opens her mouth like she's going to yell, but nothing comes out. Still nothing. Still no noise. No sound. No nothing at all coming from her. I just don't get it. I don't know what's ahead, I say. I don't know nothing about nothing, but whatever it is, it's gotta be better than what's behind. It's gotta be. And as she hears me, her face changes. It clears up to almost blankness again, and she presses her lips together.
Go, go, go!
Manchi barks. She holds out her hand for her bag. I hand it to her. She stands, shoves the binocs in, loops it over her shoulder, and looks me in the eye. Okay, then, I say. And so that's how I set off running full out toward a river for the second time in 2 days, Manchi with me again, and this time, a girl on my heels. Well, past my heels most of the time. She's ruddy fast, she is. We go back up the hill and down the other side, the last of the swamp really starting to disappear around us and turning into regular woods. The ground gets way firmer and easier to run on, and it's sloping more downhill than it is up, which may be the first piece of luck we've had. We start catching the actual river in brief glances off to our left side as we go, my rucksack's bashing me in the back as I run and I'm gasping for breath, but I'm holding my knife. I swear right now before God or whatever, if Aaron ever comes in my reach again, I will kill him. I ain't hesitating again. No way. No how. I ain't. I swear to you. I will kill him. I'll ruddy well kill him. You just watch me. The ground we're running on is getting a bit steeper side to side, taking us through leafier, lighter trees and first closer to the river and then away from it again as we run. Manchi's tongue is hanging out of his mouth in a big pant, bouncing along as we go. My heart's thumping a million beats and my legs are about to fall off my body, but still we run. We veer close to the water again and I call out, "Wait!" The girl, who's got pretty far in front of me, stops. I run to the river's edge, take a swift look around for crocs, then lean down and scoop up a few handfuls of water into my mouth. Tastes sweeter than it really should. Who knows what's in it, coming out of the swamp, but you gotta drink. I feel the girl's silence lean down next to me as she drinks, too. I scoot a little ways away. Manchi laps up his share, and you can hear us all taking in great raking breaths between slurps. I look up to where we're going, wiping my mouth. Next to the river is starting to become too rocky and steep to run on, and I can see a path cutting its way up from the riverbank, going along the top of the canyon. I blink as I realize. I can see a path. Someone's cut a path. The girl turns and looks. The path goes up and along as the river drops below it, getting deeper and faster and turning into rapids. Someone made that path. It's gotta be the way to the other settlement, I say. Gotta be. And then, in the distance, we hear hoofbeats. Faint, but on their way. I don't say another word, 'cause we're already on our feet and running up the path. The river falls farther and farther away beneath us, and the larger mountain rears up on the other side of the river. On our side, there's a thick forest starting to stretch back from the cliff tops. The path's clearly been cut so men would have a place to travel down the river. It's more than wide enough for horses. More than wide enough for 5 or 6, in fact. It ain't a path at all, I realize. It's a road. We fly along it as it bends and turns, the girl ahead, then me, then Manchi running along, till I nearly bump into her and knock her off the trail. "What are you doing?" I shout, grabbing onto her arms to keep us both from falling off the cliff, trying to keep the knife from accidentally killing her. And then I see what she's seeing. A bridge, way on up ahead of us. It goes from one cliff edge to the other, crossing the river what's gotta be 100 feet or more above it. The road, or path, or whatever, stops on our side at the bridge and becomes rock and dense forest beyond. There's nowhere to go but the bridge. The first shades of an idea start to form. The hoofbeats are louder now, and I look back and see clouds of dust rising from where the mayor is following. "Come on," I say, running past her, making for the bridge as fast as I can. We pound down the clifftop path, kicking up our own dust. Manchie's ears flattened back, running fast. We get there, and it's way more than just a footbridge. 6 feet wide, at least. It looks like mostly rope tied into wooden stakes, driven into the rock at either end with tight wooden planks running all the way to the other side. I test it with my foot, but it's so sturdy, it don't even bounce. More than enough to take me and the girl and a dog. More than enough to take men on horseback who want to cross it, in fact. Whoever built it meant it to last. I look back again down the river at where we've run. More dust, louder hoofbeats, and the whispers of men's noise on its way. I think I hear, "Young Todd," but I'm only imagining it because Aaron will be way behind on foot. But I do see what I want to see. This bridge is the only place where you can cross the river, from back where we've run to miles farther ahead as you look. Maybe another piece of luck is coming our way. "Let's go," I say. We run across, and it's so well made you can't even see twixt the gaps in the planks of wood. We might as well still be on the path. We get to the other side, and the girl stops and turns to me, no doubt seeing my idea and my noise, already waiting for me to act. The knife is still in my hand, power at the end of my arm. Maybe at last I can do some good with it. I look over where this end of the bridge is tied to the stakes in the rock. The knife has a fearsome serrated edge on part of the blade, so I choose the likeliest looking knot and start sawing on it. I saw and saw. The hoofbeats get louder, echoing down the canyon. But if there suddenly ain't no bridge, I saw some more, and some more, and some more, and I'm just not making no progress at all. "What the hell?" I say, looking at where I've been cutting. There's hardly a scratch there. I touch the serration on the knife with my finger, and it pricks and bleeds almost immediately. I look closer at the rope. It looks like it's coated in some kind of thin resin. Some kind of ruddy, tough, steel-like resin that ain't for cutting. "I don't believe this," I say, looking up at the girl. She's got her binocs to her eyes, looking back the way we came down the river. "Can you see him?" I look down the river, but you don't need binocs at all. You can see him coming with your own two eyes, small but growing larger and not slowing down, thundering their hooves like there's no tomorrow. We've got 3 minutes, maybe four. Crap. I start sawing again, fast and strong as I can, forcing my arm back and forth, hard as I can make it, sweat popping out all over the place and new aches forming to keep all the old ones company. I saw and saw and saw, dripping sweat down my nose onto the knife. "Come on, come on," I say through my teeth. I lift the knife. I've managed to get through only one tiny bit of resin on one tiny little knot on one huge effing bridge. "God damn it," I spit. I saw some more and more and more. And more and more than that, sweat running into my eyes and starting to sting. "Todd," Manchie barks, his alarm spilling out all over the place. I saw more and more, but the only thing that happens is that the knife catches and I smash my knuckles into the stake, bloodying them. "God damn it!" I scream, throwing the knife down. It bounces along, stopping just at the girl's feet. "God damn it all!" 'Cause that's it, ain't it? That's the end of everything. Our one stupid chance that wasn't a chance at all. We can't outrun the horses, and we can't cut down a stupid mega road bridge, and we're gonna be caught, and Ben and Killian are dead, and we're gonna be killed ourselves, and the world is gonna end, and that's it. A redness comes over my nose, like nothing I've ever felt before, sudden and raw, like a red-hot brand pressing into my own self. A burning, bright redness of everything that's made me hurt and keeps on hurting. A roaring rage of the unfairness and the injustice and the lies of everything coming back to one thing. I raise my eyes up to the girl's, and she steps back from the force of it. "You," I say, and there ain't gonna be no stopping me. "This is all you. If you hadn't shown up in that ruddy swamp, none of this would have happened. I'd be home right now. I'd be tending my effing sheep and living in my effing house and sleeping in my own effing bed." Except I don't say effing. "But oh no," I shout, getting louder. Here's you! Here's you and your silence, and the whole world gets screwed! I don't realize I'm walking toward her till I see her stepping back, but she just looks back at me, and I don't hear a goddamn thing.
You're nothing!
I scream, stepping forward some more.
Nothing! You're nothing but emptiness! There's nothing in you! You're empty and nothing, and we're gonna die for nothing!
I have my fists clenched so hard my nails are cutting into my palms. I'm so furious, my noise raging so loud, so red, that I have to raise my fist to her. I have to hit her. I have to beat her. I have to make her ruddy silence stop before it swallows me and the whole effing world. I take my fists and punch myself hard in the face. I do it again, hitting where my eye is swollen from Aaron. And a third time, splitting open the cut on my lip from where Aaron hit me yesterday morning. You fool! You worthless effing fool! I do it again, hard enough to knock me off balance. I fall and catch myself on my hands and spit out some blood onto the path. I look up at the girl, breathing hard. Nothing. Just looking back at me, and nothing. We both turn to look across the river. They've got to the place where they can see the bridge clearly. See us clearly on the other side. We can see the faces of the men as they ride, hear the chatter of their noise as it flies up the river at us. Mr. McInerney, the mayor's best horseman, is in the lead, the mayor riding behind, looking as calm as if it was nothing more than a Sunday ride. We got maybe a minute, probably less. I turn back to the girl, trying to stand, but I'm so tired. So tired. We might as well run, I say, spitting out more blood. We might as well try. And I see her face change. Her mouth opens wide, her eyes too, and suddenly she yanks her bag out in front of her and shoves her hand in it. What are you doing? I say. She takes out the campfire box, looking all around her till she sees a good-sized rock. She sets the box down and raises up the rock.
No, wait, we could use...
She brings down the rock, and the box cracks. She picks it up and twists it hard, making it crack some more. It starts to leak some kind of fluid. She moves to the bridge and starts flinging fluid all over the knots on the closest stake, shaking out the last drops into a puddle at the base. The riders are coming up to the bridge, coming up, coming up, coming up.
Hurry,
I say. The girl turns to me, telling me with her hands to get back. I scrabble back a little ways, grabbing Manchi by his scruff and taking him with me. She steps back as far as she can, holding out the remains of the box at arm's length and pressing a button on it. I hear a clicking sound. She tosses the box in the air and jumps back toward me. The horses reach the bridge. The girl lands almost on top of me, and we watch as the campfire box falls. 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 Toward the little puddle of liquid, clicking as it goes. Mr. McInerney's horse puts a hoof on the bridge to cross it. The campfire box lands in the puddle, clicks one more time, then whoom! The air is sucked out of my lungs as a fireball way bigger than what you'd think for that little amount of fluid makes the world quiet for a second, then boom! It blasts away the ropes and the stake, spraying fiery splinters all over us and obliterating all thought, noise, and sound. When we can look up again, the bridge is already so much on fire it's starting to lean to one side, and we can see Mr. McInerney's horse rear up and stumble, trying to back up into four or five more oncoming horses. The flames roar a weird, bright green, and the sudden heat's incredible, like the worst sunburn ever, and I think we're going to catch fire ourselves when this end of the bridge just falls right away, taking Mr. McInerney and his horse with it. We sit up and watch them fall and fall and fall into the river below, way too far to ever live through it. The bridge is still attached at their end, and it slaps the facing cliff, but it's burning so fierce it won't be no time at all before the whole thing is just ash. The mayor and Mr. Prentice Jr. and the others all have to back their horses away from it. The girl crawls away from me, and we lay there for a second, just breathing and coughing, trying to stop being dazed. Holy crap. You all right?
I say to Manchi, still held by my hand.
Fire, Todd!
He barks.
Yeah, I cough. Big fire. You all right?
I say to the girl who's still crouching, still coughing.
Man,